The Primal Instinct of the Chase by Marcin Malek. Featured in fourth issue of the Irish Field Archery Monthly e-zine. I don't know about you, but for me, archery is above all the best fun in the world and I treat it as such. Yes, I do go for competitions, where I perform better or worse, but it's not about the result, at least is not the highest prerogative within the system of values that governs my decision to enter one. The most important factor are always the people, colleagues and friends with whom we spend time together in the woods and often catch a cold, especially at this time of year. Sharing hobbies and facing the whims of the weather creates a bond, and no matter how you look at it, within some years it turns into more of a family connection rather just being acquaintances. It may be an exaggeration, but that's how I think of you and that's how I see you. All the more reason why I enjoy watching you shoot and learning from you at every given opportunity. The coolest thing is that each of you has developed your unique system of reaching the X mark, which, as you know, is not as easy or obvious as it may seem to onlookers. I am always curious about how you have progressed to this point, for everyone has journeyed this way and everyone in their own fashion. Of course, we all agree on the principle that the basis of any technique is a consistent and repeatable way of drawing and releasing a certain pattern of shooting. Every archer in the course of his training should make sure that particular elements of the shot are invariable. Position in relation to the target, foot placement, stance width, head held, preferably natural and upright, shoulders relaxed and aligned, breathing technique, inhaling when the bow is drawn and holding until released, the way the bow is held in the bow hand, constant degree of slight flexion of the elbow and its position, the forearm of the bow hand should bend perpendicular to the whole body, constant fixation of the anchor point, a set place to rest fingers on the bowstring plus repeatability of the release, for bows without shelves, a fixed position of the hand and the arrow resting against the bow. Each of these elements is vitally important and should be thought through and rehearsed by the archer when it comes to our daily routines. A friend once recorded me whilst we were practicing in the woods and then showed it to me so I knew what I did wrong. Videos are an excellent form of education. With these friendly recordings, you can see, for example, if you always draw to the same extent, if the release hand causes the arrow to lift up or go down, or if you bend your head when drawing the bow, or maybe you dropping your bow hand too quick, thus bringing your arrow down before it leaves the bow. These are only a few examples, practice knows thousands of them, in countless variations. That is why it is so important to establish a firm routine and cling to it as if it were a life vest floating you up after the shipwreck. A marker on the bowstring, for example a pinched nock or a thread or even a small slash light bead under slash over the arrow nocks, as well as a mark on the bow where the arrow rests against it, will significantly improve repeatability. Once we have gone through all these difficult and complex issues and we think we are out of the woods, we are suddenly faced with the difficult choice of which aiming method to adopt. A truly Shakespearean dilemma. To paraphrase the famous Bard of Avon, one could ask, to hit or not to hit, that is the question? Whether it's nobler to suffer twist in our minds, the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against the sea of troubles, and at once decide which way we stir from now. Counting the paces or measuring with a naked eye? When aiming with the arrow point, we use the dominant eye. A straightforward test is enough to determine which one is the leading one. We make a small opening in a piece of paper and look through it at a selected point on the wall. Then we bring the paper closer to our face, all the time looking at the chosen point. Consequently, the eye we are looking through when the paper touches our face will be our dominant one. That is the one with which we track the mutual position of the arrow tip and our target. In such aiming, a lot depends on anchoring. If we use the sporting technique, when we touch the string with our mouth and the drawing hand is tucked under the chin, then the line of sight goes through the string, meaning that when aiming we place the arrow tip exactly under or over the center of the target, or exactly in its center, depending on the distance. This is a very precise method as, by aligning the bowstring and arrowhead, we are guaranteed to aim perfectly in the horizontal plane. If we anchor to the corner of the mouth or even draw as far as the ear is or further away, as the Koreans do, we lose the ability to look through the string, while the arrow point we track with our eyes against the target will always be to the right or left of the target, depending on whether we are right or left-handed. This puts us in a rather awkward position. As we need to calculate the vertical range, the distance between the arrowhead and the target, compensating by moving the arrow tip over or under, or sometimes aiming at the center, plus we shift to the right or left, and that is a lot of to comprehend within a fairly limited time between the draw and the shot. The instinctive approach apparently does not include the act of aiming. When shooting instinctively, we do not close an eye, we keep our eyes set on the target, we draw and release when it feels right to do so. We measure the target without deliberate calculation, our body does it for us, acting as a gyroscope providing all the necessary data to gauge and maintain our spatial orientation. Just that and all that. The most perfect aiming instrument in the world, and the best thing is that everyone has it. We look ahead, tense and shoot while our brain, as if beyond consciousness, predicts the path of the arrow, selects the necessary force and the moment for release. As I have shown before, aiming in two planes, i.e. when anchored to the mouth or further away, is far more unreliable and troublesome than shooting with a sporting method. However, in my understanding of the issue, changing the anchoring method does not solve the dilemma. On the contrary, it creates unnecessary confusion and maybe a frustrating experience. 4. When aiming with the tip of the arrow, either with the sporting method or with the mouth anchor, we subconsciously remember the places or distances indicated by the arrowhead placed above or below the target, and this, in my opinion, awakens in us something resembling the so-called Pavlov's dog reflex, namely aiming by memory. This approach takes its toll, especially when we often shoot in unfamiliar terrain. One last thing I don't like about aiming with an arrow point is the common habit of placing the tip of the arrow against the edge of the target, instead of the center. I call this a deceptive shortcut, which is often taken by reason, as the edge of the target, it's just a matter of perspective, always seems closer than its center, so judging the distance requires less mental effort. Clinging to such a style of shooting may get you dependent on targets of a certain shape and size. Believe me when I say, I have been in this spot and merely dug up myself out of this hole. The only positive thing I learned was realizing that I have difficulty shooting at very close distances and against flat targets. As you can guess, I shoot instinctively. But not always. There are strange cases when my body doesn't want or can't cooperate. I don't know why it happens, there is no specific formula to it, it just happens and that's it. Then I resort to aiming with the arrowhead. So you might say I use a mixed method, with 80% of instinctive approach and the remaining 20% of the other one I don't fancy enough. 4. By closing one eye we may encounter difficulties with correct perception of depth of field, which contributes to hardship when assessing the distance between ourselves and the target, as well as impairing the tracking of moving objects. According to my experience, relying on instinct, especially when it comes to targets of varying sizes or very small ones, improves our effectiveness by far, as the distance between the arrowhead and the center is relatively large. Instinct also works very well when it comes to moving targets, notably for those shifting fast, as there is no time to calculate the position of the arrowhead placed against such a target. It also shortens the length of aiming, that in turn reduces hand fatigue and vibration. Additionally, it is much less stressful, observable when releasing. It is rather daunting trying to convey in one or two sentences the benefits of switching to instinctive way of shooting, although I will give it a try. Maybe it's a matter of trusting our intuition, that has no reason to bend us to the world of weights and measures, since not everything has to be taken for granted and converted into quantifiable figures. Isn't the continual peering into the grass to look for characteristic features within the terrain, or the relentless attempt to memorize the myriad variations of lengths, heights and distances to objects of widely varying shapes, doesn't become in the long run an ordeal? After a while, one simply gets fed up. That is what happened to me, and that is what I wanted to tell you about. Share your experiences, speak of what annoys you, and ask your fellow archer for advice. Sometimes a person you go into the woods with may teach you a great deal of useful hacks. Knowledge acquired therein no substitute for any course, even the most expensive and longest ones. But first of all, trust yourselves, Nature made us this way and steered to reach deep within ourselves to bring out the best within, the primal instinct of the chase. Use it, cherish it, and develop it through friendship.